Allow her to go right ahead and do her evil in our midst. Only until I'm in power, Eberle said. She's got to go. Get rid of her. As Eberle nodded somberly, the solution to his problems suddenly struck him with the blinding force of a revelation. Yes, he said to himself, that will solve everything. He made a warm smile for the still scowling Morgenthau and, leaning forward, patted her chubby knee. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of everything. Her frown faded somewhat, replaced by curiosity. Trust me, Eberle said, smiling still more broadly.
Laboratory, Lavoisier. Chris Cardenas wondered why Urbain had asked her to meet with him. Not in his office, not even in the astronomy pod where the big telescopes were housed. Here, in the science building, in his main laboratory, which had been named for the 18th century French founder of modern chemistry, Antoine Laurent Lavoisier. Cardenas's own lab, named after the American physicist Richard P. Feynman, was in a separate building up at the top of the ridge on which Athens was built, as far away from the other labs as possible. As she made her way down the brick path that curved past the low, white-walled apartment buildings and shops of the village, Cardenas felt the old resentment against unreasoning fear of nanotechnology still simmering deep within her. Keep it under control, she warned herself. Keep everything in perspective. Remember that Lavoisier was beheaded during the French Revolution. Idiots and bastards have always been in our midst. So she put on a sunny smile as she entered the lab complex and saw Edouard Urbain standing in the doorway to his laboratory, waiting for her. He looked nervous. No, Cardenas decided, not nervous. Excited. Expectant. Almost like a little boy standing in front of the Christmas tree, eager to tear into the brightly wrapped packages. Dr. Cardenas, Urbain greeted her. How good of you to come. It was good of you to invite me, she replied. He ushered her into the lab. Cardenas was slightly taller than Urbain, her sandy blonde hair and bright blue eyes a sharp contrast to his dark, slicked-back hair and eyes of mahogany brown. The lab was two stories tall, its bare metal ceiling the underside of the building's roof. A tall screen stood just inside the doorway, cutting off the main area of the lab from view. The place felt to Cardenas like an airplane hangar or an empty warehouse. With a slight gesture, Urbain led Cardenas along the screen toward its end. I wanted you to see this, he said, his voice brimming with anticipation. She thought his mustache would start quivering any moment. I am very proud of what we have accomplished. They reached the end of the screen. With a flourish, Urbain turned the corner and pointed to the massive object standing in the middle of the laboratory floor. The first thing that Cardenas noticed was that the lab had been cleaned, the floor swept. Not a scrap of paper or equipment in sight. No wires snaking across the floor or dangling from overhead mounts. He spiffed up his lab, Cardenas thought. He's got it looking like an old automobile showroom. There it is, Urbain said, aglow with pride. Titan Alpha. A spacecraft, Cardenas realized. More than 2 meters tall, nearly 3, she estimated. Standing on a pair of caterpillar treads like an old-fashioned tank. Massive. Silvery gray. Titanium, she guessed. Its oblong body was studded with projections. It has been built here completely, Urbain said, almost in a whisper. It did not exist when we left Earth. None of it. My staff and I constructed it. Cardenas became aware that half a dozen men and women were standing off along the far wall of the lab, like students who had been lined up and told to remain quiet and respectful. You'll go to the surface of Titan in this, Cardenas said. Not in person, of course, said Urbain. Alpha is designed to be teleoperated from here in the habitat. It is a mobile laboratory that will explore the surface of Titan for us. I see. Urbain snapped his fingers. One of the technicians across the lab whirled and began tapping out instructions on a desk-sized console. The spacecraft seemed to stir. A loud electrical hum filled the lab, and a pair of long skeletal arms unfolded from one side of its body. Pincer-like claws opened and shut. Cardenas instinctively moved back a couple of steps. Urbain laughed.
Don't be afraid. She won't harm you. Those grippers can handle the most delicate biological samples without damaging them.
It's very impressive.
Yes, isn't it? Alpha is equipped with a complete array of sensors. She can take samples, store them in insulated capsules, and send them back to us, here in the habitat, for analysis.
Won't it return after it's finished its mission?
No, never. She remains on Titan. We will send replenishments of fuel and supplies for its sensors.
Isn't it nuclear-powered? Cardenas asked.
Of course. The fuel is necessary for the sample return rockets.
I see. Urbain sighed contentedly.
I haven't had as much time to spend on this project as I would have liked. My hours are consumed with this political campaign, you know?
Cardenas nodded. Yet you've completed the job. It's a great accomplishment.
I am blessed with a fine staff.
Afraid that Urbain would order the bulky spacecraft to start trundling across the laboratory floor, Cardenas said, I'm very grateful that you asked me to see it. She started toward the door, slowly. Urbain caught up with her in two strides.
My motivation was not entirely from pride, he said, looking a little less animated now. I have a favor to request of you.
Still walking along the screen, feeling somehow oppressed by the massive spacecraft, almost threatened by it, Cardenas replied with, A favor? Urbain hesitated as if he didn't know how to choose the right words.
It concerns Alpha's self-repair capabilities.
Cardenas glanced sharply at him.
I was wondering,
Urbain said as they turned around the end of the screen,
if nanomachines might be able to repair Alpha while she is on the surface of Titan.
Cardenas nodded, thinking,
So that's it.
They're all terrified of nanobugs until they come up against something where nanomachines can help them.
I mean, Urbain went on, you yourself have nanomachines in your body, don't you? They're constantly repairing your tissues, aren't they?
With a slight laugh of relief, Cardenas answered, And you'd like to have a nanotech immune system built into your spacecraft.
Nanomachines that could continuously repair any equipment failures or damage.
Or wear and tear, Cardenas added.
Yes, precisely.
She stopped at the open doorway, thinking swiftly. It would take time, Dr. Urbain. When do you plan to send the spacecraft to Titan?
As soon as we establish orbit around Saturn, within a few days of that at the most.
I certainly can't come up with a set of therapeutic nanos that soon.
But perhaps they could be sent to Alpha after she is on Titan, once you produce them.
Perhaps, Cardenas conceded.
Will you look at the possibilities? He asked eagerly.
Cardenas saw in his eyes that he regarded this machine of his almost like a human being, a woman he loved and cherished and wanted to protect, keep from harm. A kind-hearted Dr. Frankenstein, she thought, worried about the creature he's created. Then a sharp pang of memory hit her. How many times have you been called Frankenstein? She asked herself.
Can you do it? Urbain pressured. I can try. Good, excellent.
Under one condition, she added. His brows rose toward his receding hairline.
Condition? If you mean you want me to allow that stuntman to go down to the surface,
Cardenas said. But we've tested the decontamination procedure several times now. I've sent you the reports.
Tests in the airlock, yes, I've scanned your reports. so you know that we